want you to keep in mind that we recorded this seminar June of 06, so any reference to any statistics, just keep in mind that it was recorded 6 of 06 and take it from there. Well, thank you guys very much for all the support. This is the last in a series. I think a lot of you feel that this is the most important day of the seminars. Some of you do. At the end of these 2 days, you probably will have learned a lot about where you're going to participate in the foreclosure business and how you can see when you start having these foreclosures mount, the difficulties it is in tracking these foreclosures. We're going to go over an exact day's list. It just so happened there were 25 NODs, 25 trustee sales on this day's list, which was, you know, a couple weeks ago. And I want to go over that with you very carefully because it's where all of the people fail in this business. If you're going to quit the business, it's because you do not know what to do with that list. Now, think of that list right now at nearly the bottom of the curve of the number of foreclosures we're going to deal with. And there were 25 each NODs and trustee sales. Now, multiply that by 2009 with a multiple of 15. That's what's likely to happen. You will be looking at 300-400 of those a day. How long is the process in California? Nearly 4 months. Multiply that times how many days and work days are in there. If you want to be busy, simply don't know how to look at that list and eliminate everything that doesn't make sense. That's what you're going to learn today, is you're going to learn to chop off everything that's marginal and concentrate on something that makes sense. Because we're going to systematically go through the day. I want you to understand where the dates of the loans are. We could do an automated system here where we just plug it into a computer and eliminates all the stuff and leaves you with a few. Okay, I want you to understand the methodology behind making those decisions, and so we're going to manually do it today. But you also end up realizing, and at the end of this, looking at 50 properties, we're going to understand how many times out of 50 loans the lenders are going to lose money. How many times it would have been worth approaching the owner, and that we even had a chance to approach the owner because they had enough equity. How many times the trustee sale will probably end up with an REO instead of a third-party bid. How many times people are getting simultaneous first and seconds. And how many seconds are going to get wiped out at the trustee sale completely. So you're going to take a look at all of that, and I think it's going to be a real eye-opener for you because the numbers are starting to grow, but they're going to get much, much bigger. Let's go ahead and turn to chapter 1, page 1. We'll talk about why foreclosures occur. And this may seem like a very elementary chapter, but it isn't. Because there are times where there are decisions made outside of the box of a particular loan that affect loans in general. And so we'll talk about all of those things in this chapter. Foreclosures, first of all, usually are caused by people problems, and that's why they never completely disappear. Even though you had tremendous equity gains in the last 5 years, you still managed to have 3,000 trustee sales in 2005. There were 3,000 people that somehow managed to mess it up so bad that they couldn't get out of it. And the year before that, there was more than that. And so sometimes they borrow money at the wrong rates with prepayment penalties and there's just no room to get out of it. But sometimes they just ignore every opportunity to get out of it and hide. And that's common. So the foreclosure business is wrapped up with people problems, but they start also to have problems because of other things. And obviously foreclosures occur because of loan problems. One of the things that's a big benefit to eliminate loan problems being acknowledged that people got in over their head is rising equity. So when you have a market like we had in 2003 to 2005, People could have been over their heads monthly, but they kept on getting bailed out. Why? Because they could go access extra dough from a credit line. And really, it masked the problem. And all of a sudden, when the equity stops building and the credit line can't be expanded or there's no longer a refinance available, the game is up, and very quickly. Buffett has a great quote for that. He says, "You don't know who's swimming naked until the tide goes out." The tide is going out. And the people that had the loans that they can't afford, even the fixed rate loans, you can mask that for only so long. And the lenders were really a participant in getting people to get all they could. And now there's going to be a problem. And guess what? Those lenders are going to share big time in the problem. And when we look at those lists, you're going to see how serious it'll be for them. So people end up not being able to afford the payment. And the reason they got overextended is greed. They kept on making money on the last real estate deal, or they've seen other people make money in their real estate deal. And they just said, you know what, we're just going to push it. We're going to squeeze every dollar into our budget for a real estate payment we can. And then all of a sudden, it ends. Every once in a while, you get a balloon payment coming due that could cause a problem. But the biggest one is the last one under number one. The adjustable mortgage payments get too high. If you think the list that we're going to look at today is large, wait till you see next year. We got $300 billion worth of adjustable mortgages having their first payment due this year. Say a 3-1 ARM. Next year, it's $1 trillion worth. A trillion. And so the amount of lender-owned property that's going to result from that loan, those loans being made, going to be tremendous. This chart, affordability, we're all pretty familiar with. And when you get to this low affordability, which we now have done for the third time, and it's actually 14% is the month number. When you get to that 14%, all of a sudden, your euphoria ends and you're unable to flip the properties quickly to a buyer. These are the numbers for Corona. Since January, when they started with a 2-month supply in the MLS, they now have a 7-month supply in the MLS. From 2 to 7 months supply in 6 months. They have currently 88 sales in June. So if you stretch that out to its logical conclusion, you'll have about 108 closings in June, and last year we had over 300. So your inventory is building and your sales are crashing. And so that's why foreclosures occur, because people just simply can't get out of their loan. Turn the page, number two. How many people do a regular mailer or run an ad where they're getting talked to by sellers? Let me just see your hand. Have you noticed a change of the conversation? Yeah, there's a lot more people willing to just hand you their stuff. Take it over, just take the payment, I'll walk away. A lot of times they refinanced, had that conversation with a guy yesterday, started out kind of cocky. By the time we were done, he was like, "Could you take it over?" "No, I don't even want it. I don't even want what he's created for himself." He's pulled out $200,000 on his house. He's, you know, sometimes sellers sort of forget that they've made that money. It's like, well, I'm going to lose here. Well, wait a minute, what'd you pay for it? $135? Oh, okay. And how much down did you put? Well, 10. 10 grand turned into 200 and you're hurting? See, but they're hurting because it isn't selling like it used to. And all of a sudden, that's becoming a problem. Divorce is a reason for foreclosure. If you have a 50% divorce rate, let me tell you, it's not helped out by financial problems. And when foreclosures start becoming more and more prevalent, you're going to have more and more people unhappy with the decisions that they made. Number three, property in unsellable condition. In the boom market that we experienced in, say, 2000 to 2005, you could have a fixer-upper that would sell without any repairs, because people wanted it so bad. You just didn't have to fix anything. All of a sudden, that's not true. In 2006, if you buy a property, you've got to be aware that you better fix it, because what's going to come on board here in the next few months are lender properties, that are all going to be fixed inside as if they were new. And that's going to be your competition. Every time you sell, there'll be a Fannie Mae repo down the street that's new garage door, new paint, new carpet. And so if your house is just as is, you're not going to look so good. And so you got to be careful about that. If it's really a mess, and I reference Rosalind Street, you already know the example, which we fondly recall as the Roach House. If you have a house that's so messed up that when you park in front of it with your wife and she goes, "Forget it, pal," that conversation will be very prevalent for minor repairs in the next cycle. If it's really not real good, then let's pass, because we have so many choices. In San Diego, you went from about 3,000 listings to 21,000 listings, 7 times the amount of inventory to look at. So as a buyer, guess what? You can choose to be picky. You have a lot more choice. Number 4, loss of job. Typically, we have two wage earner families, and if this economy takes a hit, one or both of those might either lose a job or have declining income. So if you were a lender that you were used to making a lot of money, if you were a realtor used to making a lot of money, there's a good chance you're not going to be making the same amount of money. I think one of the bigger things that's going to happen is you're going to end up laying off a lot of construction workers. We already know that K&B has closed their San Diego office. They're selling their building lots. They've laid off the people that buy a lot of their materials because they're not going to build as much. Centex just walked away from $30 million of land deposits that were released to the seller. That's a significant hit and a big mistake because they thought something was going to occur that isn't. And so there's going to be ramifications to people that have jobs. One of the large framing contractors, and I may have mentioned this already, laid off 100 foremen about a month and a half ago or so. And 100 foremen, each foreman's supposed to build 500 houses or frame 500 houses. It's an admission that 50,000 houses are not going to get built. That's 50,000 plug-in whatever a house has doesn't get used. 50,000 AC units, roofs, and so forth. So that's a big deal. So it's not just the construction workers. It's wherever they buy those materials, and it's whoever makes those items that are going to have layoffs. So this is going to start snowballing and cause problems. That's the unemployment chart 1.2. And what it shows is from 1980 to 82, 1989 to 92, and 2006 to 2008, if we do the same thing, we're going to have higher unemployment. And it's my belief that getting to that affordability number that's too low starts causing all of these problems. And so that's what I think we've got coming. On the bottom of page 2, job transfers. If you're out of work, you probably have to find a place that's doing better. You may end up leaving the state. So do you leave your family behind, try to sell the house? Do you leave the house vacant while you have 2 payments? These are all the decisions that's going to start coming up. And as they exit the state of California, that's migration loss. On page number 3, you'll see a map that shows the migration patterns. California is one of those orange ones, and it's called high outbound. So we're losing people. Sacramento has not acknowledged that fact yet, but this is from a moving company that moves the people. Guess what? They know, because they're the ones that are using the trucks and they're leaving. And if you look at the U-Haul numbers, any day you want, go to the U-Haul site, pretend you're moving from your city to another city, and then move from that other city back to the same city in California, you'll see a difference of maybe 10 times the cost. $3,000 to leave California, $300 to come back. And the only reason that is that there are more trucks leaving than there are coming in. And when U-Haul wants the trucks back, they have to hire somebody and fill up the tank. That's migration loss, and that's also starting to occur. Top of page 4, another reason for foreclosure, you got drug use. That can be an increasing problem with stress. And sometimes the evidence is obvious. I have bought houses where there's been needles in the carpet. I bought one house where I was so afraid somebody was going to light a match, because this lady's preference was snorting little bottles of propane. Now, I don't think that'll probably do you much good over the long haul, but I'm not kidding. As you walked around, you would accidentally kick these little bottles and they would ping against the wall or into other bottles. It was all over the place, so drugs can be a problem. Number eight, miscalculation of cash flows from rentals. When I learned all about this in Colorado, I thought I had a positive cash flow building. I didn't even know how I could possibly miss. I bought a fourplex for $40,000. How does that not cash flow? It's pretty easy because you can only get $200 at the time, and I had a 50% vacancy factor. So if you collect $400 gross rent, a realtor might in his book, have you ever seen these listings? It says investor delight, kind of setting up that scenario. Positive cash flow, you got $400 of rent and your payment is $399, so that's a cash flow. All right. And then when you own it, you're really sad because it wasn't really true. They forgot to include some of the things that actually cost you money. The biggest problem is the last one in number eight, ignoring the need for cash flow altogether due to price increases. See, when you have the mindset that says these prices are just going to keep on escalating, I don't have to worry about negative cash flows. We just talked to somebody a couple days ago that had invested sort of at the tail end of Arizona. Arizona's not going up anymore. He can't sell what he has, and his negative cash flow for two properties is only $1,300. You know, you multiply that times 12, that's 15 grand in a market that's probably going to go down. That's not a happy situation. He lives in California. That's an absentee owner. He should be getting a mailer any day, right? Now, if you were that guy getting a mailer, would you want out pretty fast? Well, that's the kind of person that's going to be loaded up in California. I was talking to Ward a couple days ago. We were speaking at a meeting in San Diego. He said, there's a building in San Diego that's known as the Dark Building. The entire condo project has sold out, but there's literally three light bulbs that are on in the whole project. It's all absentee owner owned, all hoping this thing was going to go up. Can you believe that? Wait till they start unloading that inventory simultaneously. That'll be pretty exciting. Number nine, the bottom drops out of the entire economy. We rarely think it'll ever happen to us. And the problem is for California is that there's such a long stretch in between bad experiences, we literally forget they ever occur. And so that's the problem for anybody that's been an investor that started after 97. You've only experienced good things. So people that are 30 years old have lived through the most explosive bull run we've ever experienced, and that's all they know. You can understand why they think real estate is wonderful, and that's all it is ever going to do is go up. And when people write books telling them the boom is going to continue and give them all the reasons for the demographics, it's very easy to understand why you buy into it. It's been a long time since we've equated real estate equals bad word. It's just been wonderful. And in about 2 or 3 years, we're all going to be, if we didn't know it was coming, you'll be talking to people that really don't like real estate at all. And it's going to get worse until the bottom. And that's why it's so important to be able to make decisions independently to where you know in advance what's coming, you're not shook up by it. As a matter of fact, you'll be in a position to take that crummy stuff off their hands at the perfect time. So when the bottom drops out, you do create a tremendous amount of foreclosures. And it starts wiping out equity. So the more and more foreclosures you have, and now there's a chart on the bottom of page 4. More and more foreclosures you have, the more and more REOs the lenders start having to deal with, and the more and more motivated sellers there are in the marketplace. So this chart, this time, got all the way down to 3,000 in 2005. We're now going the other way at about 75% a quarter. Now, that's not a big deal in a year. right? Started out at 3,000. It's not a big deal. Wait till next year. If you do that same percentage, it sort of starts getting exciting. And then if it continues that for a while, which it probably will, you can see that this is going to cause a lot of foreclosures to be in the marketplace and have a big impact on price. When you have foreclosures increase, those last 2%, last two times it went up, 981%. Remember that interest rates declined during that cycle. So every adjustable mortgage payment got cheaper. If you held properties during those cycles between 90 and 97 and 80 through 83, and this time, if interest rates go up, it'll be the first time that that ever has occurred, where you have foreclosures increasing and interest rates going up at the same time. That's why our multiple this time could be 15 or 20 times where we started. Top of page 5, tax problems are a reason for foreclosures to occur. So the IRS bills, especially self-employed people, a lot of times they kind of need the money. You get a commission check, not making as much, so you just spend it, you don't pay the taxes, and then you try to play catch up, and that starts growing, and that's a problem. Employers do the same thing. They're short on profits, so they stop paying employee taxes just to make payroll, and that snowballs. And one of the other things that's probably going to happen is the IRS billing you for forgiveness of debt on short sales. We have a short sale chapter, and we're going to talk about that, but that I think could be a big item where the IRS is attempting to collect money from people that have done a short sale on something they refied, and they didn't know that that was coming. My least favorite reason for foreclosures is death and illness. The elderly couple example was a real eye-opener to me. I'll tell you the story later, but the reason why it's here is that there are circumstances where you need to know it is not time to buy a house. Go ahead and let your humanity do what it's supposed to do instead of making a profit. I had a call. You guys referred me to a lady that was at the seminar last week. Anyway, there was a lady that called me up, referred me to somebody that had a home situation problem. She was going through a divorce, and her circumstance was just personally very difficult. And I decided just to pass on the house buying and just to sit there and go, you know what, if I were in your shoes, I would do this, I would do this, I would do this. There's room for that in this business too. There's plenty of chances to make money, but every once in a while you'll recognize one of those times where it's not appropriate to buy a property. One of the reasons foreclosures can change directions or increase very dramatically is a government policy change. So on page number 5, under number 12, here's a series of decisions that were made in the past that caused a lot of problems. Due on sale provision enforced, that's the Garn St. Germain Depository Institution Act of 1982. That was a problem because up until then you could take over subject to loans, and now that was a problem. Restriction of funds for builders, the FIREA Act. That was a big problem for them. They ended up having funding pulled. They were halfway through projects that they couldn't build out, and it made a lot of builders go out of business. The reserve requirements were raised in 1979. The raising of interest rates to fight inflation by Volcker in around 1980. Raising of capital gains tax, Tax Reform Act of 1986, which also wiped out a lot of the deductions people were allowed to take from apartment buildings to their income as doctors, and it ended up causing the S&L crisis. And recently, there's something that's in the works that's going to change lender guidelines. How many people are aware that the guidelines for loans are going to change? Okay, about 10%. That's a very significant thing if you realize what percentage of Californians are able to buy with the price that we have and a fixed rate loan product. Because what they're going to do is they're going to make suggestions to lenders that they stop doing the teaser rate qualifying, that the people that get the loan, even though it's a teaser rate beginning percentage, They actually have to qualify them as if the loan was had already changed the interest rate. They're going to stop, or they're going to request that lenders stop, and I'll describe the request part of it in just a minute. They're going to request that the lenders quit making what they call stacked risk loans. Stacked risk means that the people come in with no money. They don't have to show where they get their income. They don't have to prove their assets. And they're always the least experienced people. And basically the government is saying that's pretty unwise to keep on loaning these people all this money when the only recourse we have is the property. So we suggest that you stop that. However, you can go ahead and make that loan if you want, but here are the ramifications of that decision. Number one, you'll be subject to criticism. Wow. The second one, though, is you'll be subject to sanctions and increased scrutiny by inspectors. Oh, okay, that means audits, right? That means they're going to audit all of those files. And it also said increased reserve rates. And that means, that's a bad word for lenders. It means you're not able to loan as much money out as you were before. And if one of these loans, let's say you sell a loan package, whole block of loans to another lender, and some of these loans end up being defaults, you will buy back that loan at 100% face of value and put 100% reserve money aside for that loan until it's resolved. So are lenders going to be real excited about making that loan? Probably not. Do you know what percentage of Californians need that product to buy the property with the going price? Over 50%. So just like the FIREA law took out the legs of the construction lending and made it impossible to get loans, when this guideline becomes enacted, we're going to find it much more difficult to sell our product to somebody that shouldn't be in there in the first place. And so that could be a very significant hit in price to our market. So that's what's coming up, a guideline change. Here's the goal, and this is at the bottom of page 8, almost the last sentence. Be very careful about buying foreclosures where you end up with the same problem the past owner had. You don't want to be in a position where it's hard to sell a property and you don't have a margin, or you have too much money into the deal and you get stuck with it. So you have to be careful. We're still on page 5. There's just a couple of notes I've made to myself. These are the things that are going to be like a booster rocket for this cycle of foreclosures. Low affordability coinciding with rising interest rates, a government policy change, and perhaps you might even have a presidential change of party in 2008. So thinking out there where we're really in the midst of a pretty bad cycle, is it possible that somebody might decide to roll back some of the capital gains benefits that have accrued? It's possible. So it's hard to predict that far out in the future, but the scenario for California having a lot of foreclosures go up and up and up, it's very likely. And so the business provides lots of opportunities, but you don't want to put yourselves in harm's way by taking over the wrong property. So when we go over this list in a little while, you'll understand that there's going to be opportunities, but there's a lot of ones that you'll probably want to pass on.